Concert. We're at London's Wigmore Hall to hear him sink his pianistic teeth into Schubert's Sonata in G and four impromptus. It's a remarkable pilgrimage into Schubert's late piano works, taking in concert halls round the world. And you can hear the latest stop live Tuesday night on BBC Radio 3 from 7:30.
We're on 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and also online. Just gone 1 o'clock, time for the news from Ian Skelly.
Syria says soldiers and tanks are moving into the northwestern town of Jisr al-Shughur, where officials claim more than 100 security personnel were killed on Monday. Across the country, protests are continuing, with activists reporting that more than 30 people died when security forces opened fire yesterday. Thousands of Syrians living in the north have fled to Turkey. The BBC has been told by doctors in the besieged Libyan city of Misrata that it's come under the most sustained bombardment since rebels seized control. They say at least 31 people were killed in yesterday's artillery attack. More than 150 people were wounded. British officials say the RAF has destroyed four of Colonel Gaddafi's main battle tanks outside Tripoli. They've also attacked a military base on the outskirts of the city. The Education Secretary, Michael Gove, has been accused by Labour of making another U-turn on education policy. Ministers are to review the money to be cut from council budgets in England to help fund new academy schools. The Treasury Minister, Justine Greening, has rejected suggestions that the review was a U-turn. Officials in Afghanistan say 16 members of the same family, eight of them children, have been killed in an explosion in Kandahar in the south of the country. They were in a bus which hit a roadside bomb. Villagers in eastern India have formed a human chain to prevent the authorities taking over land for a new steel plant being built by a Korean company. Reports say around 2,000 women and children linked arms and refused to budge. The Lark Ascending by Ralph Vaughan Williams has been chosen as the most popular piece of music to be stranded with by listeners of Desert Island Discs. More than 25,000 people submitted nearly a quarter of a million tracks. Elgar's Enigma Variations came second. The weather for this afternoon, there'll be sunshine and scattered showers in most places. The northeast, though, will have more cloud and persistent rain for much of the day. The wet weather will ease during the evening to leave most places dry but chilly. And that's the BBC News and the weather. It's 2:30 past one.
And time to join Catherine Bott for the Early Music Show.
A sinfonia from one of the funniest, sweetest operas of the 17th century, Cavalli's La Callisto. And we're going to hear more from that recording of it later on, because it's a work that's very dear to the heart of the subject of today's early music show, René Jacobs. There's probably not a singer alive who hasn't occasionally muttered, cautiously, that they could do a better job than their conductor. Well, René Jacobs is a singer who took that idea and ran with it to a whole new career. His projects are always grounded in historical practice, but they never play safe. He was directing rehearsals of Rameau's opera Platée when I talked to him in Amsterdam earlier in the year, and I began by asking him about his singing years. Was there a moment when he thought, "This is what I want to do"?
Yes, that moment came very early, because I was a choir boy soloist too. I had a good voice, and I sang in concerts. I sang alone, for instance, Schubert songs and Mozart songs. So then every year, the boys' choir did a special concert. That was the St. Matthew's Passion in the Cathedral of Ghent. And that was, for me, that were the first concerts I remember the evangelist who was Richard Hughes, and the Dutch alto Afie Heinis, who was a kind of Kathleen Ferrier in Holland. And I was thinking, that I would like to do. Then my voice did not really break. It was like 1 whole year. I didn't sing, but I sang until my 16th year with my soprano voice. And then 1 year of not singing. And then I started again, and I started as a tenor, because I didn't know what a countertenor was. For me, the tenor was Richard Hughes, who sang the evangelist in the Matthäus Passion. But I felt that I had possibilities in a higher register than the tenor sings, which was, of course, the falsetto, and my teacher didn't want me to use this falsetto. And then I met for the first time Deller. He came to Ghent with the consort, singing the Faerie Queen. And there I heard for the first time a countertenor, and I said to myself, hey, that's probably my voice. I think that he said to me then that in the summer he was doing some master courses in the south of France, in Sénanc. And I went to that in the next summer. I went to that course. And the summer after, too. He was not a teacher of technique. He didn't say a lot of technique, except for some very healthy concepts about breathing. He influenced me very much in the way he, what he could do with the text, because I thought that the text was so clear. And he had colors in his voice illustrating the text. And actually, the two singers who influenced me most in that time were Deller and a baritone that I met only much later in my life, Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau.
René Jacobs on two singers who influenced him as a young man. When René burst onto the scene, he made a tremendous impact, largely because of the sheer emotional intensity of his singing. I asked him if he'd felt impelled to move away from the prevailing climate of restraint among British early music singers.
Well, I always was myself. As a conductor too, I stick to what I want to be. And for me, at the time also, poetry was something that I loved a lot. It's not for nothing that then when my parents said you should study also something else as music, that I decided to study classical philology, which helps me immensely with all I do now. And I loved how Deller brought this poetry on a higher level through the music, and Fischer-Dieskau brought the German poetry to a higher level through the music. Actually, with Fischer-Dieskau came not only my love for German Lieder, but also for the German as a language. And now also, when so many years later, when I start with studying a new opera, the fun starts for me, studying the libretto first. And sometimes it takes me 4 or 5 days, only with the libretto, really trying to go in the depth of what is behind the text. And it's from the study of the libretto that many of my decisions, musical ones, come.
René Jacobs tapping on the table to illustrate what he was saying. He's as articulate with his hands as he is with his voice. More music now, from one of his early recordings. He compared this aria by Johann Christian Bach with the expressiveness of a much later composer, Gustav Mahler, who would surely have revelled in the rich sound of violin and 4 violas da gamba.
Thank you.
Ah, that I should have sufficient water. An aria by J.C. Bach, Ach, dass ich Wassers genug hätte, sung by René Jacobs with members of the Koken consort. Koken is a magic name in early music, so I wasn't surprised to hear René cite the three Special K brothers among the people who gave him his first breaks as a singer.
Well, I started then during my university years singing with the important early music ensembles in Belgium and in Holland. In Belgium, that was, of course, the three Kuiken brothers. And through the Kuikens, I got in contact with Gustav Leonhardt in Amsterdam. So in Amsterdam, I did many concerts for very little money. Concerts that leave really a memory in my mind, that unforgettable memory, with people like Leonhardt, but also Frans Bruggen and also Ton Koopman. Bach cantatas in the Waalse Kerk, for instance. That was among the first great opportunities, the greatest in that field, and the first performance in Holland of the St. Matthew's Passion on early instruments, which was in Groningen, which was fantastic because the two organs were played, one by Leonhardt and the other one by Koopman. And it was the first time for the people to hear a countertenor singing Bach.
Tell me about Concerto Vocale. You formed this ensemble in 1977, at which point you were obviously becoming very well known, but you were still a young man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it didn't start like I want to now my own ensemble and I call it Concerto Vocale, because originally this name, Concerto Vocale, was the name for the series of recordings for Harmonia Mundi, the French Harmonia Mundi, with, as a basis, was William Christie, the continuo, Wieland Kuiken on the bass file, Konrad Jungenel for the lute, and another singer, Judith Nelson. With her, I recorded many, many chamber duets, Stefani, Handel, Porpora, and so on. So there's this very rich repertory of duetti and cantate da camera. And then, because it was always the same people, more or less, they started calling us the ensemble, Concerto Vocale. And then Concerto Vocale was expanded in many ways, also with instrumentists, which mainly for 17th century music. And when I think about it now, the name Concerto Vocale for also an instrumental ensemble, I think it's very nice. Because especially 17th century music, you have to play really like the singers sang it. So that was Concerto Vocale.
René Jacobs. Well, he mentioned recording duets with soprano Judith Nelson. So here's one of them now by Stefani with some other big names. Bass viol player Wieland Koken, harpsichordist William Christie, and lutenist Konrad Jungenel.
Thank you.
Judith Nelson and René Jacobs, unhappy lovers in that duet by Stefani, Mai do piangere, You Will Make Me Weep, originally recorded on vinyl back in 1980. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, today celebrating the art of René Jacobs. It seems with the benefit of hindsight that his progression from running concerto vocale to conducting was the obvious thing to do. So I asked René, was this part of a master plan, or did it just happen?
It just happened. It was not a master plan. Going from small formation, vocal chamber music, to larger formations, to opera and oratorio, that was a natural progression. I made, for instance, for Harmonia Mundi, and also for Innsbruck, because I was then in already very active in the early music festival in Innsbruck, we made a series of Cesti recordings. Antonio Cesti, Venetian composer, but he was also very active in Austria. And we started with cantatas, and then duetti da camera. And then in Innsbruck, I said, I go a little bit further now. We do a concert with concerto vocale, with excerpts from Cesti operas. So that already I had to conduct a little bit. And then the leader of the festival proposed me to do a real opera the year after. And then, so that my choice was L'Orontea.
That was 1983. 83. Debut as an operatic conductor.
And singer. I sang too.
You sang too?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I sang the role of Alidoro. It was a little bit circus because I had to conduct and then to sing and so on. It was with a small ensemble, the Venetian opera, you can do with two violins and continuo, of course. And the concert performance was so successful that the intendant asked me to do a staged version 2 years later. And then, of course, I could not sing anymore. And from one thing came another thing, and more.
Well, your love of the Venetian 17th century repertoire was the key, it seems to me.
Yeah.
Because you could sing it all, and now you could direct performances. What is it about this Venetian opera that calls to you?
Yeah, I liked very much in this repertory, going so from Monteverdi's Venetian operas to Cavalli, Cesti, and then people like Sartorio, but I stayed mainly with Cavalli and Cesti. I like this mixture of serious and comic. It's very much also a subversive kind of theatre, because the comic roles, after the serious scenes, the comic roles were allowed to say things that the serious roles would never say. And the serious characters, speaking about love and about honour, and the gods especially also, put themselves in impossible, ridiculous situations. La Callisto, for instance. That is something that I love very much in theatre.
Time to hear something Venetian, I think. As promised, here's a comic scene from the realisation of Cavalli's La Callisto, made by René Jacobs.
Consorte, avessi metto mai, tolga la sorte.
Molle, molle come la ruggine, e non d'uccelli setole son questi peli teneri che da membri mi spuntano. E tanto m'adombrano il mellare morbide, ma
Thank you. selvaggetto lascivo. Ti vedo quel che sei, senza che t'abbelligi e ti descrivi. Certo, certo, di capra nato, esser tu dei. Avama dunque le capre e non lor vivi.
Disperse lacere le chiome ad aria, in volti squallidi, sopra il cadavere del dio di Menalo. Cantate, flebili, cantate, cantate la me.
Sconsolato e scaccia il torbido, la tua diva il petto morbido nella fe serpe pestifera, al tuo bene salutifera, la speranza ancora suscita.
Risuscita, 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 risuscita.
Risuscita, 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 risuscita,
risuscita.
Conforti deboli sono i vostri, implacabile e fiera vipera, a miei preghi e fatalia. Ne rammentasi del bel don di lane candide che la fe scendere dal suo giro. Vezzosa e fulgida a baciarmi in labbro rigido. Io temo, temo e dubito che da gote più piacevoli, più vaghe e morbide, volga il mio.
singulti amare quelli mi stempro l'anima.
Se sboris investiti di questa tua ruvida l'amore che immagini, quel vago che rubati al cuore ogni giubilo, in braccio alla perfida, squartandolo tirasi.
Io per gropio musi cenile, io per grotte gnoti e torrini, io per mongier miedo altissime, de coi punti a corpo d'indole, sarò spia, sempre instancabile.
Amore, aiutami, soccorso chiedoti, e fa che in braccio torni al mio giaccio, fallo repregoti. E fa che in braccio torni al mio giaccio, fallo repregoti.
Pane, consolati, chi letto morbido di fiori, il torbido svanir.
Svanir,
vedremo te. Pane, poi fremiti da morte,
The Dance of the Bears, ending that scene of Arcadian innuendo from Cavalli's La Callisto. Dominique Wyss, who has made the part of Saturino his very own, David Pitzinger as Silvano, and Barry Banks as Pan, with Concerto Vocale conducted by René Jacobs. Back to our conversation in Amsterdam.
There's one important Italian opera composer that we're having to skip over if we're going to keep with this mixture of sublime and ridiculous, and that's Handel. Now, you've recorded as a singer and as a conductor a great deal of Handel, but he wasn't so interested in this juxtaposition.
Well, not anymore the juxtaposition, but he worked on several old Venetian libretti. Circe, for instance, Circe was then already 80 years old as a libretto. And because he liked those kind of libretti, but they needed a lot of adaptation, because for the public of his days, it was a little bit too much of mixture. And also the arias were much longer. So the libretto had to be reduced, and they reduced more the comic characters than the serious characters. But he still liked those libretti. And of course, one of them is a real tragicomic libretto, is Agrippina, written for Venice. Agrippina is my favorite Handel opera as it comes to the libretto, the quality also of the libretto together with the music. So for me then, right now I like the biblical oratorios more than the Italian operas.
Thou bring me up the man whom I shall name.
Alas, thou knowest how solace cut off those who use this art. Wouldst thou snare?
As Jehovah lives, on this account no mischief shall befall thee.
Whom shall I bring up to thee?
Bring up Samuel.
Spirits, I was
numerous foe stands ready for the battle. God has forsaken me. No more he answers my prophets or my dreams. No hope remains unless I learn of thee. What course to take?
Hath God forsaken thee? And dost thou ask my counsel? Did I not foretell thy fate when madly disobedient thou despair the cursed Amalekite and on the spoil display rapacious? Therefore God this day hath verified my words in thy destruction, hath rent the kingdom from thee and bestowed it on David, whom thou hatest for his virtue.
A scene from a Handel oratorio that's a match for anything in his operatic output. Saul meeting the Witch of Endor. René Jacobs conducting Concerto Köln with Gidon Sachs as Saul, Michael Slattery as the Witch, and Henry Waddington as Samuel. Well, René Jacobs may have left singing behind, but his views on bel canto are fascinating.
Bel canto is beautiful singing. So,
yeah.
But every period has his own ideal of what is beautiful singing. But all the bel cantos have some things in common. You have to see more the points in common than the differences. And one of the points in common is that singing was supposed to be, in all periods, bad if the singer could not sing legato, if he could not really realize a beautiful sostenuto of the sound, that together with good singing, I say good singing now, good and beautiful singing, it's the same, is the every period has as an ideal that the singer can sing soft and loud and make messa di voce, crescendo and decrescendo, on long notes in the whole range of his voice. And every bel canto in every period in every country will say you are not a good singer if they don't understand the words. But when they speak about that, they also mean you color the voice. You color the voice, you give every word his own color. That it, every bel canto has that in common. But how they realize that, then, you know, that, we should not use bel canto for only Puccini, like many people do. Bel canto we should use for from the 17th century on, from, you know, that verse in the Monteverdi Orfeo, where Speranza says to Orfeo, "You will need now in the underworld, or duopoe d'un gran core ed un bel canto." What you will need now is a big heart and beautiful singing.
Un'altra palmure
Our last music in today's programme, a scene from the first great opera, Monteverdi's L'Orfeo, with Andreas Scholl as La Speranza, Lawrence Dale as Orfeo, and Paul Gérimont as Caronte. Concerto Vocale was directed by René Jacobs, and I hope you've enjoyed his insights into music making as much as I did. My thanks to him for a very entertaining and thought-provoking hour. Just one tiny little postscript. Before the microphones were switched off, I couldn't resist asking him if he missed singing.
Yes, I miss singing. And today, at the end of the rehearsal, when we looked at the schedule for next day, so I was sitting together with my platé, and we saw that tomorrow we go in Act Two, and he has there his big scene, an enormous bel canto, French bel canto scene. So we started singing it, and I was singing along with him. And he said, "I can feel that you would like to sing again."
That was René Jacobs talking to Catherine Bott. And in tomorrow's programme, Lucy Skeeping will be chatting with the harpsichord player Sophie Yates about the French composer and keyboard virtuoso Claude Balbastre. That's at the same time, just after the 1 o'clock news here on BBC Radio 3.
It's not about the money, money, money.
Nothing quite as wonderful as money.
On BBC Radio 3, Money Talks. A series of plays by leading dramatists from the last 150 years tackling a topic of perennial concern, money. The Money Talks season starts tomorrow night with a new production of Carol Churchill's comedy satire, Serious Money, for Drama on Three.
I'm tired of making money for other people.
Going to make a million a year?
I might do.
A play set amid the financial excesses of the 1980s, still resonant today.
Too late for them to make the company over, because I am going to take the company over.
Serious Money, Drama on Three, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
And now, the Radio 3 Lunchtime Concert, which was broadcast live last Monday from London's Wigmore Hall. Fiona Talkington is the presenter.
If the pianist Angela Hewitt had her way, I think we might be ripping out the seats here at Wigmore Hall and getting up on our feet for this concert. As her many fans will know, the concept of dance underpins her performances with passion and authority, as Angela herself could easily have chosen to be a professional dancer. And although we're sitting in rows of comfy seats, I suspect there'll be a good deal of toe-tapping going on. Angela Hewitt's become one of the most respected Bach performers of our time, and she's going to perform two of Bach's French suites and then dance music by Chopin, seven pieces which formed part of the ballet Les Sylphides, originally known as Chopiniana, and premiered by Diaghilev's Ballet Russe in 1909. There's a wonderful intimacy about Bach's French suites, written not for the concert hall, but to be played by his family, and were included in the collection he put together for his second wife, Anna Magdalena, in her Klavierbüchlein, little keyboard book. The music was never actually meant for dancing, but the spirit of those original Baroque dances is ever present. Angela Hewitt begins with a suite number 2 in C minor, with its opening refined allemande, a more forceful courante, then a gorgeous lyrical sarabande as a third movement. The fourth is a lively air leading to minuets, fashionable in Bach's day. A dance of great poise and courtesy, says Angela, the man and the woman facing each other all the time, making an intense courtship beneath a polite exterior. And there's a rather challenging gigue to finish, this one with its origins in the Canary Islands, characterised by spiky dotted rhythms. And applause now for Angela Hewitt coming onto the stage here at Wigmore Hall to begin her concert with Bach's French Suite No. 2 in C minor.